It looks like finally, after several months of talking, looking, thinking, negotiating, and discussing, we're going to have a backdrop for the speakers here. Probably within the next week or two, we finally decided on a room divider. It's going to be similar to the color of this podium. It's going to be about 8 feet, 9 feet wide, 6 feet tall. This will be a nice, solid background so that when we're showing the videos and the speaking, you'll have consistency every week, and it'll be a nice wide thing so that everybody can see it and participate in it, and it'll look, I think, more professional. Well, as we've been hearing, we've only got a couple more weeks before the Passover season begins, which includes the days of unleavened bread. I thought what we'd do today is just go over the preparatory items necessary to approach the Passover season effectively, properly, and wholesomely. Now, let's begin by turning to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25. Over the last several weeks, we've been hearing bits and pieces of what it should be done before Passover and unleavened bread. Some of the things that we need to think about and do are physical. Some things are spiritual. Some things are mental. Some things are even emotional. It's not just one thing that we approach this very important and powerful time with. It's multiple aspects of our life and our being. Here in Matthew 25, we see the comparison between those who are prepared for what's coming and those who are not prepared for what's coming and what the outcome could be. I remember when I was a Boy Scout back in Michigan in my teen days, early teens, every year we'd go to something that was called a jamboree, where dozens and dozens of Boy Scout troops would get together at this gigantic plantation. It was a huge property, maybe 50 acres, 100 acres, I can't remember how big it was, but it was enormous. We'd be together for a week. We all camped out in tents, so we were sleeping two, three, four men to a tent. And it was spread out over a huge, massive area. We'd work to get our merit badges and do all the different kinds of events that we were having going on this entire week. And we were out in the middle of nowhere. If you had to get up at night, which many times we did have to, you had to go find a latrine, a makeshift bathroom out in the middle of nowhere, because it was a very rustic campground. There wasn't all kinds of facilities there. You were hoping that there was a full moon out and it was bright and sunny so that you could see bright and shiny so you could see where you were going, because it was really, really dark out there. It'd be like being in the middle of the desert, hundreds of miles from a town. There was no ambient light coming from any direction. Each of us had our own lanterns filled with kerosene or the white gas or whatever it was we were filling our lanterns with back in those days. And it just seemed like every single night somebody from the tent had to get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. Well, about the third night in, I was one of the ones that had to go. So I got up, and we would typically go two or three guys at a time to go together to this latrine that we had out there. So I got up, and another guy joined me, and we went to do our duty bout in the middle of nowhere. We finally found it and did our latrine stuff. And we were turning around to come back, and all of a sudden the lantern that I was carrying, because the light that night it was cloudy, overcast, and there was no moon out, so it was pitch black outside. You couldn't see hardly anything. But my lantern went out. So I pumped it, that little metal thing you pump, and then you try to light it, and pumped it, and tried to light it. Nothing would work. I couldn't get my lantern back together. Well, the two of us wandered around for 20 or 30 minutes, and we were getting really disoriented. We couldn't find where we were going, because this place was enormous. I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tents, and maybe a couple thousand people, I don't know. We were wandering along for such a long period of time that I guess we started making some noises. We started hearing things. You know how you start hearing things when you're afraid in the dark? The boogeyman's out there somewhere. And we kept thinking maybe there's going to be coyotes coming after us, or maybe there might even be a wolf out there coming after us, or who knows? There might even be a bear out there in the middle of Michigan coming to hunt us down. But after a while, one of the camp leaders in one of the tents got up and said, "What are you guys doing out here? You're making all this noise." We said, "Well, we got up to go to the bathroom, and we can't find our way back." He said, "Why can't you?" He said, "Well, our lantern went out," and he chewed us out for letting the lantern go out to begin with. And he said, "Well, what campsite are you guys in?" Oh, we were so disoriented, and we were so frustrated and so nervous and afraid, we couldn't even think of the name of the camp area, the number that we were in. So finally, after a couple minutes, we figured it out. We told him. He said, "Oh, great." We were on the absolute opposite side of the campgrounds. It was like a quarter of a mile to a half a mile away. So he had to hike us back to our campsite, hand in tow. And then when he got there, he said, "Now you guys get back to bed. We'll talk about this in the morning, because I'll get your scoutmaster up and we'll discuss you guys being out in the middle of the night running around like this." Guess what the Boy Scout motto is? Be prepared. And we weren't. We paid the price for not being prepared. Let's look at Matthew 25 in that context and read here in verse 1. Matthew 25, verse 1. Jesus Christ is speaking here. He said, "Then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now 5 of them were wise and 5 of them were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil in them with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept, and their oil started burning down. And at midnight a cry was heard, 'Behold, the bridegroom is coming, go out to meet him.' Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps, lit them and got them going. And the foolish one said to the wise, 'Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. We don't have enough oil left in our lamps, and we won't have any means to get over there.' But the wise answered and saying, 'No, lest there should not be enough for us and you, but you go rather to those who sell and buy some oil for yourselves and get your lamps trimmed the way you need to.' And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in and with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, 'Lord, Lord, open to us. We got our lamps full, now we can see again.' But he answered and said, 'Assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you.'" Now, when you read this out of context, that seems like a pretty harsh response, doesn't it? My camp lantern ran out of oil when I was camping with the Boy Scouts, so I got chewed out for letting it happen. But, I mean, he didn't say, "Okay, I'm going to cast you into outer darkness. You got to go find your way back home." But this is what Jesus Christ tells him: "Assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. You weren't prepared for when I returned. And when I returned, you had to scramble. And because you had to scramble, you weren't ready. I don't know you." Christ says in verse 13, "Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming." So with that in mind, let's look at the rest of the sermon with the idea of preparing for the upcoming Passover season, the preparation work that needs to go into our thinking and our behavior. I alluded to this concept in the last sermon that I gave recently on the power of the Passover and the idea of preparation for that as well. Let's turn now to Exodus 12. Exodus 12, where we were just a little bit ago. It's interesting to me that the more prepared we are for anything that we want or anything that we plan to do, the more peace we have in doing whatever it is we're after, because we're confident that we're properly prepared for it. It reminds me of another story. Not sure if this story is true or not, but it makes a point. There was a farmer who had a farm in Rapid City, South Dakota. And he had a hard time finding workers who were willing to deal with the unpredictable and sometimes violent weather. I did a check on this and found out that Rapid City, South Dakota is the most notorious unpredictable weather in the entire United States. I didn't realize that. Some would try this job, but after a few days and different challenges with weather, they just said the physical demands were too great. They couldn't keep everything safe and sound, so they would just quit. And he was having this incredible turnover. Added to the pressure was the meticulousness of the farmer himself and the demands that he made on himself and all of his workers. He's OCD about his farm, which is easy to understand because that's your livelihood. Finally, one day, a modest-looking middle-aged guy came up to the farmer and said, "I understand you're looking for hands. I'm interested in the job." The farmer was exhausted going through all the other people that he had tried to get through, but he really needed the help, so he talked to the guy. He asked the guy if he thought he was really up for the task. The worker's response was this. He just smiled and said, "I can sleep through the storms. I can sleep through the storms." About a week later, in the middle of the night after the farmer hired this hand, a huge storm blew in. The farmer could hear it, the sound of it, and it scared him. Wind, rain, thunder, and lightning. He got shook. He got up out of bed, got dressed, ran out of the house, ran down to the shed where his helper was working, rattled the farmer, and he's trying to get the helper up. The helper was sound asleep inside of his lodge, so much so that he was snoring. And the farmer tried to wake him up, and he couldn't wake him up. And finally, got him woke up a little bit. He said, "We need to make sure everything's secure." He said, "We need to get up. We need to get out and take care of everything." And the worker's response to the farmer was, "Not now, I'm too tired." And he went back to sleep. Frustrated, the farmer ran out to the corral and everywhere else around the property. Got to the corral and the livestock pens only to see that the horses and cows were in the stables ready. The chickens were in the coop and all the other animals were secure in the barn with the windows and doors firmly latched and locked. Everything else had tarps pulled over it, tethered down to the ground. There was absolutely nothing that could have had damage to it because of the way the preparation of this farmhand was before he went to bed. With all this, the farmer realized what the workhand had meant when he said, "I can sleep through the storms. I took care of everything in advance." There's total peace that comes from knowing that you're totally prepared for what you're going to face. It could be a new job. It could be a rare opportunity in life. It could be taking on a really challenging project of some kind. Maybe just being able to be encouraging to someone else. That's what your job is. At any given moment in time, it's been said that we are the sum total of all of our training and all of our preparation that we've put into our lives. And if you stop and think about it, it's true. So what is the first thing that we need to do prior to the Passover season coming upon us? I say first thing, aside from, as we've heard already in some sermons and sermonettes, examining ourselves, making sure that we're mentally and spiritually ready for this. Let's look at Exodus 12 and begin in verse 14. Exodus chapter 12, verse 14. "So this day shall be to you a memorial, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day they shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. On the first day there should be a holy convocation. On the seventh day there should be a holy convocation for you. No manner of work shall be done on them, but that which everyone must eat, that only may be prepared by you. So you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for on this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. For 7 days, no leaven shall be found in your houses. Since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a stranger or a native of the land." Didn't matter. "You shall eat nothing leavened. In all your dwellings, you shall eat unleavened bread." Mark your place here in Exodus 12, because we're going to come back to this, and turn to Luke chapter 22. Luke chapter 22. There are some questions that come up almost every year about this whole concept of the Passover season and the days of unleavened bread. Questions like, why do we get leavening out? Or where do we have to get the leavening out of? Or what leavening do we need to get rid of? And when do we need to get the leavening out? The why is pretty simple. God commanded it. And it was something also done by Jesus Christ and the apostles in the New Testament. Let's look at Luke 22 and see that this is the case. Let's begin in Luke 22 and verse 7. "Then came the day of unleavened bread when the Passover must be killed. And he sent Peter and John saying, 'Go and prepare the Passover for us that we may eat.'" And in a recent sermon we saw, the Passover was the time that Christ introduced the new covenant Passover observances, which we now observe today as God's church. The other side of the coin, the where we have to get leavening out, is a little bit more subjective. And there's been controversy about this over the years in the church. First, let's go back to Exodus 12 and take a look at two verses for part of this answer. Where does the leavening need to be taken out of? Exodus 12, let's pick it up here and first in verse 15. Exodus 12, 15. "7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel." Now drop down to Exodus 12, verse 19. "For 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses. Since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he's a stranger or a native of the land. So clearly, one of the places where we need to get leavening out of is our homes or where we live, our houses. But it goes a little further than that. Flip over to Exodus chapter 13. Exodus 13. We'll see that it encompasses basically everywhere we reside throughout the day, throughout the year. Just one verse here in Exodus 13, verse 7. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and no leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. Now, when I first read this years ago and subsequent years, I always thought to myself, well, quarters, that means the same thing as your house, and it's just basically another way of saying it gets you leavening out of your houses. But it's much more than that. The term quarters here in verse 7 of Exodus 13 is from the Hebrew word that is spelled G-B-U-W-L. It's pronounced Gabul. This Hebrew word means this: a boundary, a territory, borders, landmarks, coast, space or spaces, and quarters. Basically, what it's saying, it's all-inclusive. Home, office, car, anywhere your territory or space might expand throughout the year. You might work for another company. You might have an office in that company. Whether you like it or not, that's your quarters. And we have obligations before God to clean up our quarters, wherever our quarters may be, to the degree that we are able to do that. So we're obligated to make sure there's no leavening in any of our quarters at the start and throughout the entire days of unleavened bread. Hence, we get the term de-leavening. We talk about that every year, de-leavening our homes, de-leavening our cars, de-leavening our offices, whatever the case might be. The word de-leaven is not mentioned one time in the entire Bible. It does not exist. So it is something, obviously, that we need to do. And we need to pay attention to where it is our quarters have expanded to, up to and including our cars, our offices, and wherever else we might reside throughout the year. So let's move on to what needs to be gotten out. What kind of leavening needs to be gotten rid of? As we read in Exodus 12 and Exodus 13, all leavening, all forms of leavening must be put out of our quarters. What is leavening? I get this question every single year. Every single year I've been in the ministry, every time this time of year rolls around, somebody will ask the question, what is leavening? And thankfully, we've got a sheet that I sent out to everybody. You should have all received it this last week. It says at the top of it, what is leavening? It tells what's leavening and what's not leavening. If you didn't get a copy of that in the email, I've got extra copies with me today. You can pick one up for me after services. And it's interesting because sometimes you look at stuff and you think this must be leavening and you throw it out when you realize it's really not leavening. Or you might see something and think it's not leavening and realize that it actually is. Leavening can really sneak up on you. It's really an interesting thing. So I would encourage you to look at that handout. And then the next thing that's probably most important to do when you're at this period of time is read labels. Every year, I never cease to be amazed and be surprised at what I find leavening in. Just out of curiosity, 2 days ago, I was in the kitchen and we have this little packet thing where we've got all these little mixture mixes. Hollandaise sauce, Bernaise sauce, taco seasoning, all spaghetti, all this kind of seasoning stuff. And I just started reading through. The very first one I picked was burrito seasoning. You know, you make burritos, you make the seasoning sauce, you pour the sauce on top of the burritos. This is to make the sauce. About the 10th ingredient on there was leavening, bicarbonate of soda. It's like, why do you need bicarbonate of soda in a sauce mix? But it has leavening in it, and it literally said leavening right on the label. So as you're looking through your cabinets and looking through your storage places and your refrigerator and your freezer, freezers are great places for leavening to hide. You might do something throughout the year, have a little packet of maybe yeast left after you bake bread or something like this, so you throw the yeast pack in the freezer so it doesn't go bad and it hides behind something and it sits there all season long. Or you might have a little container of bicarbonate of soda sitting in your refrigerator to eliminate odors. It's a great odor eliminator for refrigerators. You see it sitting on the shelf in the refrigerator all year long. Comes the days of unleavened bread, you don't even think twice about leaving it in there. It's been there all year long. Those are things we need to look at. We need to become label readers during the days of unleavened bread and find out what's got leavening in it and what doesn't. So more obvious ones that exist are these. Breads. Almost all breads have leavening in them. Crackers. Some cereals have leavening in them. Batter mixes like pancake mix. Snack bars, protein bars, bread crumbs. Duh. Packaged mixes, cake mix, pie shells. Many of these things have leavening in them. If you have a graham cracker pie shell sitting in your storage facility, it's got leavening in it. That's how graham crackers are made. Anything that might have flour in it may have leavening in it, so be aware of that. You'll have to just read labels. It's interesting. Some people have asked me over the years, say, you know, can I just package all of my leavening up and give it to my neighbor to hold for me until after the days of unleavened bread? Well, the Bible doesn't really talk about it in any specifics like this. My feeling on that is no. But it's interesting what happened to us a couple of years ago. A friend of our son Joe's was hanging out at the house. He knew and realized that we were going through all this stuff, and he knew that we were a little bit different in our religion. And he saw us packaging up all these things on our island in our kitchen. We had boxes of graham crackers. We had boxes of crackers. We had all these different kinds of snacks and desserts and things like this. And he said, what are you guys going to do with that? I said, we're going to throw it out. He said, why would you throw it out? He said, isn't it good? I said, yeah, it's perfectly fine. Most of that stuff's not even opened. He said, can I have it? I said, sure. So he stuck it in the bag and he took it home with him. 7 days later, he sees us going to the store, buying bread, buying crackers, buying all these stuff that we just gave him. He said, are you guys done with that unleavened bread stuff that you're doing? We said, yeah. He said, okay, I'll bring the bag back today. I said, no, you just go ahead and keep it. It's fine. You can have it. But you do what you want to do in that regard, but God says get it out, get rid of it, and maybe it's just a good way to clean out and make sure everything's fresh for the next year. Okay, let's go back to Exodus 12 again. One more item we want to talk about is when do we get this leavening out? Now, it may seem really obvious to everybody, but sometimes it's not so obvious as we go through the years of our lives and we start forgetting certain things. So look at Exodus 12 and pick it up in verse 18. In the first month, anybody know what yesterday was? First day of the sacred new year. So this is day number two of the sacred new years. I got an email from somebody who said, no, I don't have to feel guilty saying happy new year, because they sent me a happy new year yesterday. So the first month, which is this month we're in right now, Nisan, in the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. For 7 days, no leaven shall be found in your houses, since whoever eats the leaven, that same person will be cut off from Israel, whether he's stranger or native. Nothing, you shall eat nothing leavened in all your dwellings, you shall eat unleavened bread. And this is where we rely on the holy calendar. The Jews have kept the calendar intact over the centuries and millennia. We now have computers that are able to calculate all this stuff, and sometimes we have these delays in the calculations of the calendars and all that stuff, but that's one of the reasons why Passover is so late this year. We had one of these adjustment years take place this year. All leavening must be out of our dwellings by sunset as the days of unleavened bread begin. This year, that happens to be Friday night, April 22nd. Some people think they have to get leavening out of their house prior to leaving for Passover services the day before. That is not true. You have an entire extra day to get the leavening off of your property beforehand for night to be much observed or the beginning of the days of unleavened bread. Another thought regarding this is how do you get rid of it? Well, you don't put it in your trash can and leave your trash can on your property into the days of unleavened bread. It says get it off of all your quarters. You must get it off your property. So if you're doing vacuuming or you've got certain bags and you're keeping all the leavening in, keep it all in a separate spot, and then the day before, the day of, or whatever, take it to an outside dumpster off property and dump it in another dumpster, getting it away from your property so that you get the leavening out the proper timing. Drop down to verse 41 now of Exodus 12, verse 41. There's another aspect that this whole launching of the Passover season, as Dirk alluded to in his sermonette. So it's become known to the church of God as the night to be much observed. Exodus 12, verse 41, and it came to pass at the end of the 430 years on that very same day, which is really an interesting concept that should be addressed sometime in a sermon. It came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night of solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is a night of the Lord, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout their generations. And again, as Dirk mentioned in his sermonette, where it says night of solemn observance, the actual translation is night of vigil, keeping your focus on the vigilance of your life and what it is we're talking about. Let's go back to 1 Peter 5, verse 8, where Dirk went earlier. God wants us to realize, as did the ancient Israelites, that everything that he has done and the great things that he has done in our lives, to them, the great thing was they were being taken out of slavery after 430 years. That was a pretty huge thing for the entire nation of Israel. But what God has done for us individually as people in God's church is even greater than that. Because what he has done is he's taken us out of the sinful world in which we live, drew us out of that, and allowed us to become sinless in our approach and attitude to life. He allowed us to be purged from this sin, and he allowed the death penalty to be paid on our behalf, which is observed the night before Passover. He wants us to realize that we, just as the ancient Israelites did, we lived in a hostile environment. Ancient Israel lived in a very hostile environment. They were slaves, and they were treated as such. We have lived in a hostile environment. We lived in a very evil world. But we've lived in it for so long. We've lived in it all of our lives. The only thing we know is living in this evil world in which we live. And we think nothing of it at times. And sometimes we need to be reminded of it, as we were reminded at the conference this year. The world that we're living in is so evil that it's encroaching on us in the church. Something like pornography, which is an addiction. And they were saying at the conference, if you have the addiction of pornography, it's harder to break that addiction than it is to break alcoholism. Harder. Because it's so much a part of your being. It's mental. And it just destroys the entire core of the being as a Christian. Well, this evil world in which we live, the night to be much observed is designed to get us to realize what God has brought us out of. And it's been enormous in our lives. 1 Peter 5, let's begin in verse 6. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. God has us all on a plan. We've been hearing this in sermons. He's taken us from point A to point B. Every single one of us is on a different plan, a different track. And God says, I'm going to get you. My hand is mightier than anything that you'll ever experience. And if you will rely on me, I can get you to where I want you to be. Casting all your care on him, verse 7, for he cares for you. He wants us to learn to really trust him. Trusting him means we're not trusting us. We're not trusting our judgment at times. We're not trusting our courage. We're not trusting our abilities. We're not trusting our capabilities. We have to learn to trust him and let him lead our lives. And because of that, he says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks around like a roaring lion seeking to whom he may devour. Resist him. No one understand what his approaches are. Figure out why he's coming at you. God calls us because of our strengths. You've heard this before, I know you have. God calls us because of our strengths. Satan attacks us because of our weaknesses. I'll never forget that one line in one of Clint Eastwood's movies. A man's got to know his limitations. We, as Christians, need to know our limitations. We need to know what our weaknesses are. Brethren, every single one of us sitting in this room have got weaknesses. Some of us have multiple weaknesses. Those weaknesses are nothing to God if we keep them under control. Those weaknesses are everything to Satan. That's where he will attack you. If you've got a weakness with sex, he will attack you there. If you've got a weakness with drugs, he'll attack you there. If you've got a weakness with alcohol, he'll attack you there. If you've got a weakness with gambling, he'll attack you there. If you've got a weakness with gossiping, he'll attack you there. He knows what your weakness is, and he will come after you. That's why God told us, be vigilant. Know your weaknesses and protect yourself with those weaknesses. Rely on God, trust on God, go to God, get closer to God. James tells us, if you snuggle up to God, Satan will flee from you. It says, resist him, steadfast in the faith, knowing that same sufferings, verse 9, are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. But may the God of all grace, who called us to his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, offer you, after you've suffered a while, perfect, establish, strengthen, and settle you. This is where God is taking us through all this. This is where God starts with the Passover, the sacrifice of his son, paying for our sins, paying for what we did wrong. And then reminding us, I'm bringing you out of this. I'm bringing you out of this evil, nasty, ugly world that you're living in, and I'm giving you something new to latch onto. The night to be much observed, honoring, respecting, and appreciating what God has done for us, so that God can ultimately perfect us, establish us, strengthen us, and settle us, and make us strong, viable Christians that can be tools in his hands to help and serve other people. To him be the glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. This night has much significance to us as Christians. It's God's guiding and protecting hand in our lives. It's highlighting that. It's showing us about it. We need to recognize that on that night, whether we're by ourselves, alone, or with other people in a larger group, which is, again, signified by the Passover, which we celebrate the night before. God's guiding and protecting hand in our lives is there all the time. Sometimes we just take it for granted. Let's go to Colossians 4 now. Colossians chapter 4. Just as 5 of the 10 virgins did maintain a vigilant approach to their lives and prepare properly for what was coming, we too must pay attention to our lives and where we are. This is a great time of the year to do it, even though we should be doing it all the time. This is a great time of the year to see if you've got enough courage, to see if we individually have enough courage to go to God and ask God, show me where my weaknesses are. Show me where my vulnerabilities are. Show me where I need to do better. You ask God for that, he will show you. God wants you to respect that and know that the only way you're going to get through that is by him and Jesus Christ at your side. That's our only hope. That's our only means of getting there. Making sure that we are prepared for anything that might come our way, trusting in God and Jesus Christ as our strength, being constantly vigilant in our lives and our approach to everything that we do. Look at what Paul says here in Colossians 4 about being vigilant. Colossians 4, verse 2, just one verse. Continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. Making sure that our prayers even focus on the fact that, God, I need to be aware of what you've done in my life. I need to be aware of what you're doing with my life. And I need to be aware of what I need to be doing with my life. Ask him, he will show you. This is an evening to be enjoyed for sure. But in an atmosphere of vigilance in our lives of service toward God and his great plan. That's what this evening, the night to be much observed, is all about. It's a transition from Passover to the days of unleavened bread. Let's go to Leviticus 23, which leads us to the days of unleavened bread. Leviticus chapter 23. As we have seen, the night to be much observed is the official marking of God's watchful care for us, which we learned about the night before at Passover and all that led up to that. Protection from death, and now he leads us on to perfection. And this is what this whole process is all about. God says, I've got your backside. I've got you covered. If you can just trust me and rely on me, don't rely on you. And that's what these days are all about. The night to be much observed is the link between Passover and all the other watchful care of God and Jesus Christ leading us to the days of unleavened bread, getting us out of something and into something else. A commanded part of being the very beginning of the days of unleavened bread. And it gets us off to a rousing and joyous start, fellowshipping, as we heard in the sermonette, having a fine meal together, enjoying each other's company. But not just enjoying each other's company because we've got some good wine and some good food, but enjoying each other's company because we've all been saved. Jesus Christ bailed us out. And we just celebrated that the day before. That has to carry over into the night to be much observed. It's directly linked together. One leads to the other. As we read in Exodus 12 earlier, 7 days we are to live with no leavening, but only with unleavened bread. Let's read in Leviticus 23 about God's holy days and look at this one in context with all of this. Leviticus 23, beginning in verse 2. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts. So the God's now going to be talking about his feasts, his holy convocations that he wants everybody to see, know, and observe. It's interesting to note here that God uses the Sabbath as the very first feast to be observed on a weekly basis. And it's in the exact same category as the other feast days when you stop and think about it. 6 days, verse 3, work shall be done. But the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. How many of us would ever consider missing a holy day or a feast day because we're tired? Because we just need a break? Or because we want something to do something different that day? We'd probably never do that, would we? But how many times do we do that on the Sabbath? Something to think about, folks. Then he continues, verse 4. These are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at their appointed times. On the 14th day of the first month, at twilight, is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the feast of unleavened bread to the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation and shall do no customary work on it. But you shall have an offering made by fire to the Lord for 7 days. The seventh day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. The first two holy days of the year. So here in Leviticus 23, we see that the days of unleavened bread are to be observed for these seven solid days. So we get ready to close. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Those 7 days this year run from sunset, April 22nd, which is a Friday night, which is also the night to be much observed, through sunset, April 29th, which is another Friday night. I'm sure we'll be hearing more about the concept of the days of unleavened bread, getting sin out of our lives and such, like ancient Israel got out of Egypt over the days prior to and even up to and including the days of unleavened bread services. There is another side of the days of unleavened bread, though, that we must also focus on. We find it here in 1 Corinthians 5, where Paul discusses keeping the feast. He's talking to people in Corinth who got off track, who started making a mockery, if you will, of the Passover and holy days. Verse 6 of chapter 5 of 1 Corinthians, your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed, Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. He paid the price. Therefore, let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. So for the days of unleavened bread, God's saying, I want you to get sin and evil out of your life, but I want you to bring sincerity and truth into your life. God says, get rid of the wicked. Bring in the holy. Sincerity and truth. Foundational things to allow us to learn to love one another like we should. To care for one another. To have concern for one another. Which really, when you get sin out of your life, you're more capable of doing. The more sin in our life, the less capable we are of having love toward another individual. Why? Because we don't even respect ourselves. When you don't respect yourself, you can't respect somebody else. And that's what these days really signify. Well, there you have it, the entire Passover season and what each aspect represents to each one of us as Christians. I only hit on the high points today. Again, I'm sure we'll be hearing more about this over the next few weeks and during the days of unleavened bread. So we have the Passover on Thursday, April 21st, just after sunset. Services will probably be sometime around 7:45 p.m. that night. We then have the night to be much observed on Friday, April 22nd, again, just after sunset. And we have the days of unleavened bread from Friday, April 22nd at sunset through Friday, April 29th at sunset, with holy days on the 23rd and the 29th of April. Brethren, enjoy all that these days represent. And hopefully we're all better armed to properly prepare ourselves in helping ourselves to be able to really imbibe of, internalize, and really drink in the full meaning of what these days have to do with us as Christians. Have a wonderful Sabbath.